podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
That's all to say for now. More than half of the season left to go, but Manchester United have put themselves into an excellent position. Going to Anfield Sunday afternoon, the country's two biggest football clubs face off at the top of the Premier League. Welcome to the Manchester United Weekly Podcast as we look ahead to a huge game for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and the club. I say huge game, Jack, but a win against Burnley, a good win against Burnley, means that we're 3 points clear at the top of the table. And that kind of gives this a free hit at Anfield.
Yeah, it does. I think a 1-0 win against Burnley at the end of the season will not look like one of the more important results of the season. But I think for what it does and the way that it changes our approach to going to Anfield is massive. Obviously, the psychological boost from going there top of the league and genuinely top of the league as well by 3 points is obviously big. But I actually think the more important part is that I think the pressure almost now is almost completely off this United team. You know, we go to Anfield and we lose, fine, it'd be a blow, but we're still only level 1 points with Liverpool.
Yeah.
We go there and we win, we're now 6 points ahead. All of the pressure is on Liverpool to not lose this game. And I think it completely changes the way that both managers approach the game, completely changes the way that the pressure is put onto both teams. And that's why we said last week that this game against Burnley in midweek was so important, because it changes the dynamic of the game at Anfield massively.
Yeah.
And now, I don't think it changes who is favourite for the game. You know, these teams haven't changed, but I think it does change the way that both teams might approach it. And in our case, the pressure is definitely, it's not completely off. We'll never be off for a game against Anfield, but it's a lot less than it would have been had we not got the win at Turf Moor.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk more about the Liverpool game after we kind of look back to that Burnley game, which was last night. And we spoke last at the weekend about having a good record away at Burnley, and it's very true. We think of Burnley, and I think certainly back to last January when Solskjaer seemed on the precipice and we lost to Burnley before Bruno Fernandes was signed, and it was a really, really bad result. But that was at Old Trafford away at Turf Moor. We've got a decent record, and again, that showed it's a Burnley side who were very well organised. Tarkowski and me in that central defence are a really difficult pairing to face. They've got great aerial strength, but not only that, but the first 20 minutes, Burnley played really well.
Yeah, they were very, very good.
Yeah, I was surprised to see that not only were they very organised, as they always are, in terms of two banks of four and shifting up and down when required, but they also put United under a bit of pressure in their defence and stopped us from being able to drop Wan-Bissaka or Matic into that back three and have a comfortable time of it. And that made for a really uncomfortable first 20 minutes at least. The second half was different, and we imposed ourselves onto Burnley. We actually made some tactical changes as well, which we can go through in a second, but it ended up being a really good victory.
Yeah, I think you've got to credit Burnley for the start that they made. It might not be the prettiest football that they play, and it's a little bit jarring in some ways actually to see a team in the Premier League at this point in time sort of playing a long ball-based game. But it's effective. And I think what was different, as you were saying, to most Burnley performances is they weren't just happy to sort of sit back and take what they can. Even you can see it just from the way they set up at goal kicks. They came out to pressure us a lot higher than normal. You know, from goal kicks, Chris Wood and Barnes were right on the edge of our box, sort of ready to sprint to Maguire or Baye if they received the ball short from De Gea. And it forced us to go long, which obviously it's not what we're good at, and it plays exactly into Burnley's hands. So I think credit to them for what we did. But I think also credit United for the way that we adapted at halftime. I think going in 0-0 after 45 minutes, I can't say that I was too optimistic for what would happen in the second half, given that it wasn't, you know, this wasn't a 0-0 first half where we were dominating. Yeah. And just couldn't put the finishing touches on. This was a really even game, actually. And I think you can make the argument that Burnley even maybe shaded the first half. We came out after halftime, completely different setup. I think Solskjaer did really well to change the way that we were playing, and it completely changed the flow of the game. Pogba took over. I thought he was brilliant. And in the end, it was a thoroughly deserved victory, despite some nervy moments, right?
Yeah. I mean, you think about the first half, and we basically, it was a war of attrition, and both teams went against each other and kind of fought each other, and we almost stoop to the Burnley's level. And to be fair, you say it's a shame that they play like that. And it would be a shame. For example, Wolves really pissed me off because they're a team who have spent a huge amount of money and have great players and play in a really boring manner. Burnley is annoying to play against, but I respect it because, I mean, you saw the valuation of their team yesterday, $41 million.
I don't think it's a shame that they play that. It's just jarring to see a Premier League team play that style now. It's just not something that you see very often.
Yeah, I feel like with them, it's more fair enough than it is with like Wolves, because Burnley's team is kind of out of necessity rather than choice in the case of Wolves, I think. But yeah, it is jarring to play against. And I mean, we kind of fought against them in the first half, and I wasn't optimistic going into halftime, but we had had what was to me a perfectly good goal ruled out. And we might as well do it now. I was going to hold off for a second, but I don't want to talk about VAR decisions for very long. But very quickly, the Shaw Brady one, in a couple of words, what should the decision be, and should Maguire's have been a goal or not? I think it should have been a Brady sending off and a Maguire goal, but I think the Brady one has some debate to it and the Maguire one doesn't.
I honestly am not too concerned with the decision of the Shaw one. I think it was one of those that you can make a justification for it either way. Shaw definitely does get a touch on the ball, but his studs are high. And it's one of those ones that, especially in modern football, with the focus on the studs being high and going over the top of the ball, I can 100% see why it was given. And I think it was right that it was a yellow card to Shaw and not a red. I think if it was a red card, that would have been harsh. And so given that, obviously that takes away Brady's red card. Yeah. I think if Shaw wasn't a foul, it would 100% have been a red card for Brady. The Maguire one, I think, is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I have to say, when I watched the initial slow motion replay, I thought it was a foul because it does look like Maguire's arm or hand is sort of pushing down on Peter's back. But when you actually watch it from sort of a few seconds before, it's literally just Maguire's momentum bundles Peter's over because he's running from 5 yards away, which is exactly what he's supposed to do in that situation.
Yeah.
It's not his fault. He can't do anything about it. It should have been a goal.
All right, we'll leave it at that. But yeah, a 95-kilogram, 6'4" man running at someone is always going to probably knock them over regardless of where they put their hand in. But we'll leave it at that. But anyway, we go into halftime, 0-0, should have been 1-0 up. But we did change in the second half. The first half, we tried to stretch their defence, but lacked the... Cavani didn't really give us that central outlet to make it work. And it was Wan-Bissaka who sat in the back three rather than Matic. And we just didn't have any tempo or speed to our game. We needed a very good right winger to stretch the game. We didn't have that. Rashford played in that position, but kind of came in a lot of the time, and we focused on the left-hand side. The second half comes, Matic drops into the back three. That releases Pogba a bit. Our fullbacks go up. Wan-Bissaka and Shaw both went further forward, and Pogba excels. And it was a good tactical change, and it was a good change from the players, because not only did Solskjaer get the tactical change right, but he also calmed the players down at halftime, and they... a credit to them for coping with what was clearly a frustrating first half, where two decisions, rightly or wrongly, one of them perhaps rightly, one of them wrongly, two decisions didn't go their way. They coped with that, Solskjaer calmed them down, and then made the right tactical changes all round. Very good.
Yeah, I was very impressed. I think the role of Matic and Pogba, but particularly Matic, has really been undersold in the performance against Burnley. I think his ability to be able to drop into a back three like that when we had the ball and be that sort of distributor from the back was massive for us. We were sort of lacking that in the first half. Like I said, we ended up playing into Burnley's hands a little bit with the way that they pressed us high and sort of forced us to go long, which is exactly the kind of game that they excel in. And so I think the way that we dropped Matic in there created a little bit more options for us to pass the ball around the back, to get out of Burnley's press. And then, I mean, once you get the ball into Pogba or Fernandes on the half turn, at that point, it's pretty much game over for the opposition. It was a matter of time. I think credit to Solskjaer and the players for the way they responded. I think it's one of those games where it would have been really easy, I think, to come out at the start of the second half almost a little bit shell-shocked and sort of go into your shell because you're worried about sort of how aggressive and how well the opposition had played. And so I think, credit to sort of everyone involved that we didn't do that, and we did continue to press on the front foot. And I think in the second half, you saw exactly why this team is in a much different position now to where we were a year ago.
Absolutely, yeah.
These are the kind of games, and I'd say it's about Villa and Wolves as well. You know, we would not have picked up 9 points from those three games a year ago. We would have been probably staring at 3 or 5 maybe from these three games. So I think that, to me, is the biggest difference between where we are now and where we were a year ago.
And people, you can, and people have kind of made jokes about the Solskjaer's constant talking about a mentality change in the United DNA, and it's come in various different formats and in what he said. But the evidence is there. This is the evidence. And that is a credit to him. And he has got rid of the right players. He's kept the right players. He's brought in the right players. And he has given his own mentality into that. And it has made a difference. What was also good is that not only has the mentality changed, but as you say, the second half, we didn't play to Burnley's strengths as much. And it's just really satisfying to see the players and the coaches adjust to the game. And so, although we did do this in a little bit in the first half as well, but more in the second, we tried to put crosses over the top of me and Tarkowski and have someone coming at the back post so that it would beat them. And to be fair, that's how Maguire scored his goal, his ruled out goal, which was a brilliant header, to be fair, as well. But it's also how Pogba scored the winner, is those either going over the top of Tarkowski and me, or kind of hanging that cross to the edge of the area or just inside the area rather than above the 6 yard box. And it worked. And Paul Pogba's goal was deflected and a little bit fortunate, but great technique to get the initial shot off. And this was another very good Pogba performance. We needed another few weeks before we start talking about him again being a world-class player or anything. But for now, he just is making a real difference to this team and a huge difference.
Oh, massively. I mean, I know the talk of mentality is sometimes overdone and can be a little frustrating when you see this team, as it has at times, I think, over the last year, be lacking in sort of tactical nous and tactical acumen. That all Solskjaer wants to talk about at times is sort of the mentality shift. But I think you're seeing why that was actually so important this whole time, because we are so much mentally stronger now, you know, than we have been at any point probably in the last sort of 4 or 5 years. I mean, all you have to do is look at the way we've come back from so many disappointing starts and away games throughout this season. You know, I think still gone behind in 6 of our first 8 away games or something like that. So that in itself shows that this is a mentally strong team. But I think also the way that we are able to adapt to new ways of playing during games. Solskjaer hasn't always been the best at adapting in-game and sort of changing our system. But whenever it has done, I think you've seen a team that is not only flexible, but also is willing to sort of try new things and understands their roles in all of those different systems. I can't really say enough about sort of how well we have shifted that mentality. And I think away games is probably the best example of that. When, you know, you go back to under Mourinho, you know, we were struggling to ever impose ourselves on any away game. You know, every single game, even if we put in an okay performance, it was generally, you know, sort of get 1 or 2 goals, but you'd be in a real sort of scrap and a real sort of arm wrestle with whatever team we were playing. You never saw a second half performance like you did against Burnley, where, you know, we were clearly the dominant team. We really were imposing ourselves on Burnley, and it was just a matter of if we could finish the chances we created. That has been lacking in the past. And I think that mentality of we are Manchester United, we should be imposing ourselves on this game, that is massive.
Yeah. And I think that the general mentality change has helped with Pogba as well. And we can talk specifically about how Solskjaer has handled Pogba and how Pogba has handled the recent months as well. But I think the overall mentality of a team that is on its way to winning, I guess led by Bruno Fernandes, but also just this all round feeling at the club that everyone is on the same path, means that when Pogba does, when Raiola does make those comments, Pogba sticks out like a sore thumb in a way that maybe he didn't a couple of years ago when that would happen, when we had a recent past of people like Di Maria not returning to pre-season or people turning up late to training and whatever. And now kind of it's almost as if Pogba has to fit in, otherwise he is going to look even worse. And there's also Pogba is playing very well and he has the right attitude on the pitch, but Solskjaer has handled it very well. Rola came out as always and it looked like it was yet another similar situation where he was either going to have to go or we were going to have to make him undroppable again. And that hasn't happened. Solskjaer hasn't exiled him, but he hasn't made him an undroppable player either. He's got Pogba playing well, but also working hard, speaking well. And that is another testament to him.
It is testament to Solskjaer. I think my take on this, to be honest, is that the positive things that have come out of this sort of new stage in the Pogba United saga or relationship, I think the biggest thing, honestly, more than anything else, is simply that we're a good team playing well.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that it's hard to fully appreciate how much of a difference that makes to the way that a situation like the Pogba situation plays out, because it all works in a cycle. You know, you have Raiola making these statements, and if we're a team not playing very well, as to be fair, as we weren't when it first happened, you know, then the media jumps on it because it's the train to jump on now, the sort of turmoil at Manchester United, which starts and stems from sort of bad performances on the pitch. The extra media attention makes it seem like it's a bigger deal than it really is, which makes Solskjaer more likely to react to it, either by ostracising Pogba or by making him undroppable. But then when you have a team that's playing well, all of a sudden, no one wants to talk about stuff that's happening off the pitch with Man United. It's all about the transformation on it. You know, how well we're playing, the impact of Bruno Fernandes, the way that Solskjaer has turned this team around. Could we go on and win the league? You know, all these various things that it means that even if there is stuff going on with Pogba, it doesn't get the same media attention that it usually would. It therefore doesn't get blown out of proportion. And that means that even from Solskjaer's point of view, there doesn't feel like such a need to have to take drastic action against him. He can just treat him as any other player. And that's exactly what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Let's talk about Cavani a bit, because Cavani started this game, came back from his suspension and started as the number nine, Martial on the left, Rashford on the right, Fernandes behind. I mean, he offered what he always offers, which is movement and signs that he was going to finish something off at some point. He didn't in the end. But to me, this isn't to say that Cavani should never start games, but to me, this was the kind of game where it didn't suit him. And it suited him maybe better to come off the bench because he wasn't involved in the build-up play at all. And if you compare it to when Martial starts up front in these games, now Cavani is a better finisher than Martial. Cavani is better at moving than Martial. He's more got more intelligence to his movement. But Martial's hold-up play and build-up play in this is better. I mean, first half, Cavani had 10 touches, even though we had 67% possession. And against a team that's defending and sitting back against a low block like Burnley, you need that central striker to be a real outlet, to be involved in the build-up play so you don't have to just rely on crosses, on getting it wide and sticking the ball in. And we didn't get that with Cavani. And the key in the second half wasn't him, it was Pogba coming forward, as we've said, and the fullbacks coming forward. So it's certainly something to think about, especially going into the Liverpool game as well. It's a different opposition, but going forward this season, maybe it's a sign that Cavani is brilliant as a bench option, but maybe that is his role.
I think partly what you saw against Burnley is that Cavani's movement is very, very good, but it's very good when there's already sort of an established attack that has already been formed. So, you know, it's situations like crosses, like corners, like making a run off the shoulder of a defender when, say, Fernandes picks up the ball. But when you sort of need him to be the focal point of an attack and sort of create, maybe not necessarily create a chance, but just create a sort of sustainable attacking situation, that's where his game falls down a little bit. You know, we needed him. And I completely actually understand the decision to play him against Burnley, because the temptation is getting a striker that's slightly bigger physically than Martial or Rashford, who on paper looks like they're better at holding the ball up, maybe better at winning some of those long balls in the air that Burnley had forced us to play. And it just didn't really work out. I think his movement wasn't good enough to be an option when, say, Matic or Maguire or Bailly or even Pogba picked up the ball. He wasn't doing enough to sort of come short and create those passing lanes so that we could get the ball forward and then sort of come off of Cavani out into the wide areas or into Fernandes and build attacks from there. We were effectively just missing sort of the sort of tip of our team in a lot of ways. And so ended up the ball just being recycled through midfield to either Shaw or Wan-Bissaka and then into Rashford and Martial, where the attacks would inevitably break down. And so I think we're really just seeing that Cavani's game is built on taking advantage of already good attacking situations, which if you think about a lot of the places where he's been successful for Man United, they are situations where we've been chasing leads and have, you know, had been playing against a team that's sitting back a lot. And so the second half against Southampton being the best example of that, you know, we were chasing the game. We had, you know, enough players being thrown forward that we always had those established attacks. And so then Cavani's movement from situations like crosses could be exploited. Yeah. But I think, yeah, from the start against a team like Burnley, his game just doesn't really seem suited to it.
But he would be a great option off the bench. So it's not to say there's no role for
absolutely.
Him in those games. It's just maybe his impact.
And would also probably be great playing alongside another striker. That obviously isn't something that United will be doing anytime soon.
Well, it leads into looking ahead to the Liverpool game. And we'll start with a question from one of our patrons, Dave Shevlin, who asks, what is our strongest 11 to go toe-to-toe with anyone right now? So he's not asking against Liverpool. He's not asking against Burnley. He's kind of saying, he gives a bit more context and says, what's our strongest 11 regardless of opposition? If we didn't know who we were playing, but we wanted to win, what's our strongest 11? I would say De Gea, Wan-Bissaka, Bailly, Maguire, Shaw. That bit's easy. And then you get into some difficulty. I probably,
the last bit's easy. It's this middle bit that's difficult.
Well, the last bit's a little bit difficult as well. I probably would go with a front three of Martial on the left, Rashford on the right, and Cavani up top, just because I think that gives you the ability to stretch the opposition better having Rashford on the right. But there's a bit of me that's tempted to say Pogba on the left, Rashford on the right, Martial through the middle. It's a really difficult one. I think to go toe to toe with anyone, I'd probably go with that McTominay Fred midfield to give United the ability on the counter attack and the energy and to break up play as well. The question is then, do you go Pogba, Martial, Rashford, Cavani, Martial, or do you drop Martial entirely and go Rashford, Cavani, Pogba, which is something I don't think we've seen yet.
Yeah, it's actually quite a difficult question, not only because of the personnel, but also the formation. Like, this United team is so adept at playing different systems. So yeah, the back five, I think, picks itself. I'll go for the same as you. I've got sort of three options in my head. You can sort of go with the 4-2-3-1, a diamond, or the 4-3-3. If I was going 4-3-3, I'd probably go McTominay, Fred, Pogba as the three. Or would I want Matic in there at the base over McTominay?
So I think Matic is the best holding midfielder we've got. But the question, if you're going toe to toe with anyone, I feel like you're preparing yourself for the best possible opposition. And in these games where we come up against the best possible opposition, I'm thinking McTominay and Fred, that double pivot rather than Matic.
Matic individually, I think, is still a better player than either McTominay or Fred. But I also don't think he works quite as well in tandem with other players as McTominay and Fred do. So yeah, I'd probably go with a midfield three of McTominay, Fred and Pogba. And then a front three, I guess, of Fernandes, Martial, Rashford. That would it be if it was a 4-3-3. But then part of me actually wants to say, I think actually the best way of maximizing every single player at our disposal might be a diamond with McTominay at the base, Fred on the right, Pogba on the left, Fernandes as the number 10, and then Rashford and Martial as strikers.
Interesting.
I think the problem with the 4-3-3 is that both Rashford and arguably Fernandes are not in their ideal positions. Yeah. Which seems silly, given that they are two of
the
best
players.
Well,
that's why I think the...
But probably gives us a better balance.
That's why I think the 4-2-3-1 clearly suits United best in terms of personnel, is whether, despite that, another system is better. Because the 4-2-3-1 allows you to have Fernandes in his best position, Rashford in his best position. In that diamond you mentioned,
Pogba,
I just...
really, that is the problem with the 4-2-3-1.
Yeah, although I think him in that left midfield role he's a great player there.
But
I just think in the
Rashford
diamond you suggested, I'm concerned by McTominay at the base of that.
Yeah,
I think McTominay, I think we're yet to figure out what the best position is for McTominay, partly because he developed into this kind of midfielder so late. He was an attacking midfielder and a striker when in his younger days. And I think we might eventually see him become a box-to-box midfielder, which he shows signs of at the moment, but we kind of think of him at the moment, I think, as not quite like Matic, but in a similar role, and that's not really what he's suited to. I think
you could quite comfortably put Fred at the base instead, which actually I think we may have actually got on Solskjaer for doing that exact thing that I suggested, and against, is it like Leipzig, or
I think it might be like
PSG, when we sort of played a diamond and had played a diamond just a few days before, and Fred had played, I think it was that Fred had played at the base and then we switched it for Leipzig or something.
Yeah, it was something like, yeah.
I think that the problem is, I think the way to maximise, to me, I think there's a tension here between getting the best balance in midfield and maximising the output and putting them in the best position for our best attacking players in Pogba, Fernandes and Rashford. I think if you put all three of those players in their ideal positions, which to me is Fernandes as a number 10, Pogba as sort of a left-sided midfielder, and Rashford as either a striker or a left midfielder, basically just not as a right winger.
Yeah.
I think it compromises the balance in midfield. But to get the ideal balance in midfield, you have to compromise at least one of those players' positions.
I think you end up, I think for me, if I had to give you an answer right now, I would go Rashford on the right, Pogba on the left, and Cavani up front, which we haven't seen yet. So maybe it's silly to say. And I think this is as me being a little bit biased because of Martial's inconsistent recent form. And I'd be concerned for our build-up play with Cavani just there against certain oppositions. But because you've got Pogba in that left midfield position, it gives you a bit more. I think you have to compromise on Rashford because you need someone on the right to stretch the defence. And basically we need a right winger. And it's an interesting one because it makes you think, what more do United need to keep up a title challenge? And I mean, let's not wuss out the question. I think we have to put our necks on the lines. How long will we be in the title race for? We are top by 3 points now. And where do you think we'll finish? I'll let you think while I go. But I think basically, if the problem is, if this was a normal January, you'd be saying, if United can sign either a good right winger or a good holding midfielder, then they've got a chance to be in it the whole way. The other option is that the side keep improving, but they have to keep improving in terms of their attacking quality. And I'm not sure they can do that enough to end the season in the title race. I think we will end up finishing third, but not far off Liverpool and City. And I think at the moment I'd back City to win the league.
I think this is a little bit of a cop-out answer, but not entirely. I think the amount of time that we will stay in the title race is less dependent on ourselves and more dependent on whether Liverpool or City regain the form that they've shown in the last couple of years' seasons. I would be pretty confident saying that United will finish with between like 72 and 83 points, somewhere probably in that rough range, sort of mid to high 70s, maybe low 80s at push. Now, that has won the title in the past. Leicester won the title with that many points. That was also a really strange season when none of the top teams sort of kicked on as you would expect. That could happen again. You know, if at this current rate, I think we're at 36 points after 17 games. So we're averaging just over 2 points a game, very, very slightly over it. That would get us to, you know, 76, 77, 78 points. I think that's about actually the ballpark where we will probably finish. So to me, it really depends whether Liverpool or City stick with this inconsistent form and end up averaging themselves around 2 points per game, or whether you'd start to see Liverpool or City start going on a run that we know they're capable of and effectively just start winning every game. Because they are capable, even at this point, I think, of finishing on sort of 90 points, where I don't see us having that ceiling. I would say, if I had to put a prediction on it, I reckon we'll be within 5 points of Liverpool until very late on in the season. So I think some some sort of faint hope will be there until probably at least like mid-April.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, you look at the table last season, what's the difference? Liverpool are 13 points worse. No, 16 points worse off, I think, after 17 games. They're on 33 now. They were on 49 last year. And we are 11 points better off. We won 25 after 17 games last year and we're on 36 now. So that's a huge swing in both directions, not just one.
Yeah.
So we can't say we're not top of the league just because Liverpool have got worse, but we're also not top of the league just because we've got better.
Right. It needs both of those things to continue for us.
Exactly.
To stay there. Yeah. And I think at this point, I'm actually slightly more confident that we'll hold up our end of the bargain, but the Liverpool won't.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I think I agree. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Or City.
Yeah. It's nice to be top for now. Let's talk about Sunday. It's a huge game for everything we've just spoken about, because 6 points clear, it would also take us a little bit further clear of City as well, who will slowly start picking up their games in hand over the next few weeks. We were answering Dave's question about strongest starting 11. What do you think are Liverpool's weaknesses? Apart from just the fact that they have no central defenders. and even having shelved the conversation about our strongest 11, what should we go for? Because the way I see it, I think we have three options, really. You've got the old Solskjaer option, which I don't think he'll go for, but would represent the kind of tactic he used to go for in big games, where you have split strikers with speed, like Dan James and Marcus Rashford, and you go three at the back, maybe you bring Twanzabe in or you bring Lindelof in with Bai, and you hold on for as long as you can until you've still got a chance with 30, 40 minutes to go, and then you bring on Edinson Cavani, Greenwood, and Pogba if he doesn't start. So that's the option where you got three at the back, which would probably be by Maguire, Lindelof, but perhaps by Twanzabe Maguire, sorry. And then on the wing backs would be Wan-Bissaka and Shaw. And then in midfield, McTominay, Fred, and then Fernandes behind James and Rashford. Now, that's a very different option to what you kind of expect, but it is an option. The other two options are kind of the diamond or the 4-2-3-1 we've been playing with recently. But I think it's probably going to be McTominay, Fred in midfield, isn't it?
Yeah, almost definitely. I saw some people, sort of saying worried about Sunday, given that Matic and Martial both had little knocks at the end of the game yesterday. I'd be very surprised if Matic starts, massively surprised. I'd be very surprised if Pogba starts as well, unless Solskjaer follows Harry's advice and puts him at like left wing. I doubt he'll be anywhere in midfield. I'm torn on whether three at the back makes sense against Liverpool. Part of me wants to say that it does, because then you could get the wing backs pushed up a little bit higher and have better defenders against their fullbacks, who obviously are a massive source of their creativity. And part of the issue is that normally you have sort of the likes of, say, Rashford or Martial or Dan James marking Alexander-Arnold and Robertson, which obviously is not ideal, but also means that your forwards are sort of pushed back the whole time. So even if you do want to counterattack, it makes it difficult.
Yeah.
So part of me thinks that would be a good idea to sort of put that on the wing backs and not put that burden on our forwards so much. But then also, if you're going to put the wing backs on Liverpool's fullbacks, it means that we effectively go 1v1 against Salah, Firmino and Mane with a back three, say Maguire, Twanzabe and Bailly. And I don't know... Not they're not capable of that, and that's not a knock against those three players. It's more just an acknowledgement of just how good Liverpool's front three is. And I don't think any three defenders in the world would be a good idea to sort of leave them one-on-one against all those three.
I agree, but I definitely agree. But is it the best we're going to be defensively? Because you envisage those three against a back four where... this is the kind of game that Wan-Bissaka should do well in, where he isn't challenged aerially, but he can come up on those one-on-ones against, I suspect, will be Mane. probably Mane to start with at least. This is where Wan-Bissaka should excel. So it is an interesting one. I guess the concern with that three at the back and James and Rashford up top, and it doesn't have to be James, but I think he gives you the work rate in terms of pressing and the speed, even if he doesn't really give you the end product that much, is who's feeding them.
Yeah, exactly.
And I guess Fernandes is. But ideally, you'd have someone with Pogba's range of passing, but also the same person who could fill one of the McTominay-Fred roles. And we haven't got that. McTominay and Fred can't play those balls. Pogba can, Matic sometimes can, but McTominay and Fred can't. So that's a worry. And it makes me wonder whether he will go Pogba, because Pogba's work rate has been good recently, his positioning's been good. But it would be brave, because it needs Pogba's, I think it would need to be Pogba's best ever performance for United.
Yeah, it would. It really would. And then the issue you get into is it sort of makes sense logically and on paper that you want Pogba in the team, as we were just saying, to sort of be able to release us like that, but maybe don't want him to be relied upon to do the sort of defensive duty of a defensive midfielder. So then you play him a bit higher up the pitch.
Yeah.
But as we've seen so many times before, it just doesn't, for whatever reason, doesn't seem to quite work. You know, you play him, if you play him wide on the left, sure, maybe that could work. But then you're also taking away either Rashford or Martial's best position. You obviously can't play him as number 10, because that's where Bruno Fernandes plays. So it becomes difficult to almost know how to put Pogba into these games. Part of me is tempted to just say, you know what, Pogba is good enough, and he would be such a massive boost for us going forward that it's worth getting him in.
Yeah.
But I honestly don't know. I think actually one thing that's going to be really important in this game is Fernandes' defensive work. He has a habit of when either he loses the ball or the team loses the ball, that he sort of runs a bit like a headless chicken and sort of just chases back whoever's carrying the ball, which is, you know, a really admirable quality and normally is absolutely fine. But I think the person who's going to be really, really key to this game is Thiago. I think Thiago is the one who has, you know, if I think you play United and Liverpool without Thiago, I think it's actually a very even game. And having watched Liverpool without them for so long, I think that sort of backed it up. But, and admittedly, Thiago hasn't sort of hit his heights yet since returning from injury, but he is the one that I think really could change the tempo of this game and really be the one dictating everything from midfield. Whereas without him, I think we have the ability to make this a bit of a helter-skelter game where everything is done 100 miles an hour. There might not be that much quality, but the game basically just moves at the speed of light, which would probably suit us. Whereas I think Thiago has the ability to evade any pressure that we put on him, dictate that tempo. And so I think Fernandes' role defensively on Thiago will actually be really important, that he doesn't afford him too much space because he's chased.
Well, he also stops their reliance on Alexander-Arnold and Robertson. They can be marked out of the game, and you've still got that creativity in the middle. So it is a problem. And it's a good point. Fernandes will, I don't know whether it will be Fernandes marking him or someone else will be given that job. It's an interesting one.
It seems like the kind of job that Jason Park would have been made to mark about,
or Herrera more recently.
Yeah.
I guess there's the more we talk about it, the more I think that maybe the old Solskjaer method of three at the back and split strikers, I just think if they can do that and hold on until the hour mark and then bring on Cavani and Pogba, that's an incredible chance to go and win it. The problem is whether they're good enough to hold on. And to be honest, I'm not sure that's dependent on United. I think that's kind of dependent on which Liverpool shows up. So it is a difficult one. I mean, we've discussed plenty of options, and I'm sure they have been thinking about this for a couple of weeks already.
Yeah, I think this has probably been in the background, a bit of sort of a master plan coming through for this game. And I'm assuming as well that every lineup that we've had in the last few weeks has been building towards this. I think I'm very, very intrigued, honestly, about what lineup we put out. I think the problem with Liverpool is, I mean, they're such a good team when they're at their best. There's not ever going to be an 11 you can put out that completely stems the tide of
competition. Yeah, exactly, yeah. They'll probably score.
I think to some degree, you almost have to pick your poison and just say, like, right, I am dedicated in this game to stopping, say, Alexander-Arnold and Robertson, and then sort of not say, go ahead, you can score coming through midfield, but almost be okay with the fact that they might have a bit more success coming through midfield because you've put a lot of time and resources into stopping them coming down the wings. That feels maybe like a good way to go, purely because Robertson and Alexander-Arnold are just so good, and that is their main source of creativity. And it's almost like, if you're good enough to beat us with the worst part of your team, which is probably, at least going forward, which is the midfield, fair play. But we're not going to let you do it with sort of your main source of supply. I think it's going to be a great game, honestly. I think both managers will probably surprise us a little bit with the tactics that they go for. I just can't wait. Would you agree this is probably the biggest game since Ferguson retired?
I don't know. Because ultimately, it isn't. I mean,
it's not the biggest in terms of what is at stake.
Yeah,
I think it maybe is the biggest in terms of excitement.
Yeah, I might agree with that. I was going to say, just talking about, because I haven't really thought about it properly yet until we've just had this conversation, because there's been Burnley and there's been Watford and whatever. We didn't know where we'd be in the table and whatever. But just talking about it now, talking about the options, talking about their players, has really got me excited. It's got my blood going. And there is that real feeling of, this is a big game. And not only this is a big game, but this could be a brilliant game of football. Now, they could surprise us all, and Klopp could shut up shop, and Solskjaer could shut up shop, and we could have a 0-0 like we did under Mourinho at Anfield. But it has the potential to be brilliant. It is exciting, and it's an exciting prospect.
These are also, I think, what makes this game so intriguing is that these are two teams almost perfectly set up to exploit the weakness in the other one as well. You know, both teams defensively, despite having relatively good defensive records, can be got at, and especially can be got at with fast counter-attacking football, which both of these teams are sort of built on to some degree. So it could easily sort of be like a 5-5 game. But it'll probably end up being both managers risk-averse, 0-0.
Yeah,
but I mean, given it all this build-up.
But this is what we support United and we follow football for, is that the next, we're recording this Wednesday, it's 10 to 6, and for Wednesday night, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I'll be thinking about this game.
Yeah, 100%.
And then for the days that come after it as well. And that sense of excitement, would be times 10 if this was a normal Premier League season and if fans were allowed and if there was a chance of getting a late ticket for Anfield or anything. But it's still there, that feeling of excitement and tension and nervousness and butterflies is still there.
Yeah. Oh, 1,000,000%. I think, could you imagine the scenes in the away end if we went ahead at Anfield? And we were in this situation of the season. I mean,
yeah.
Marcus Rojo in the away end, he'd be going mental. As he was a few years ago. Yeah.
Phil Jones, Michael Carrick.
Yeah, I was going to say, they've all been in
there. That's the only time I've been to Anfield, was celebrating with Phil Jones when Rooney scored the winner. Right, we'll wrap things up there. Thanks for listening.
Maybe Carrick can go watch the game from the away stand instead of on the bench.
By himself, him, Darren Fletcher and Mark Dempsey, yeah. Right, we'll wrap things up. We don't want to get ahead of ourselves. We're not saying we're going to win the league. Not even halfway through the season or anything like that, but it's certainly an exciting time.
It's mental, ain't it, that we're middle of January, through the season yet.
Yeah, it's so different, but certainly an exciting time. Thank you for listening. Enjoy the game this weekend. I think you know where to find us on Twitter if you want to see our reactions on what will be a tense day on Merseyside. But we'll see you after for some reaction. Bye for now.
Podcast Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.